The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
Conceive, believe, achieve. Shut the f*** up.
And new undisputed UFC middleweight champion of the world, Michael the Count Bisping.
This is Believe You Me on the Gas Digital Network.
Monday afternoon. It's the day after Sunday. Saturday, there was fights on. Now we've got things.
It's the day before Tuesday.
I love Tuesdays as well, but still, more importantly, it's Monday. What does that mean on a Monday? Monday afternoon, specifically at 9 p.m. East Coast, Pacific Coast, 12 on the East Coast, 8 a.m. in London. What does that mean, Lewis?
It means you get another episode of the number one MMA comedy podcast on the goddamn planet Earth, the Believe You Me podcast. You're welcome, people.
For free.
You don't got to pay.
God. Jeez Louise, what more do these people want? You know what I mean?
You got to listen to a couple ads here and there. Maybe that's it. Yeah, maybe.
And we do hilarious ads, the best ads in the business, mind you.
Literally the best ads in the business. You wait till these ads come up later.
You're going to hear all about beef dicks later on. You're going to love it. You're going to love it. And listen, you know, it could be a double entendre. Maybe you like a beef dick. I like a beef dick, but I like a certain type of beef dick. Anyway, that sounds weird, and I'm going off the plot. Welcome to the show, everybody. It's an episode of Believe You Me. It's a Monday. We're all good. Lewis, you're smiling. How are you, buddy?
I'm feeling good, man. I feel very good. I've had a pretty good few days hanging out with my kid, having a good time.
Nice.
Loving life, baby boy. Traveling this week, coming out to San Diego this weekend. So
very good, very good. San Diego. I do believe that means a whale's vagina.
Is that what that is?
Apparently so. You never seen Anchorman?
I actually, you know what? I've never seen Anchorman.
Oh my God. Because that's just a stupid, terrible, predictable joke. Anytime.
To be honest, the translation has been lost for centuries.
Yes, but scholars say, yes. That's actually what he
Solid
said.
You've
never seen that, Lewis?
I've never seen it. I really haven't. I thought I had, and then I watched a little bit of it recently. I was like, I've never seen this fucking movie.
And you call yourself a comedian. Wow. Yeah. Crazy. Welcome to the show. Obviously, we had an incredible force at lightweight at the weekend, Islam Makhachev. Just pronounce that name, Lucas. Lewis.
How about you pronounce my name, Bisping?
Luis de Gomez.
Racist. Racist. Actual racism, everyone.
Jay Gomez.
You didn't have to say it like Speedy Gonzalez.
Yes, I do, actually, because
Luis
J. Gomez. No, because at the UFC, right? And I've actually pushed back on this for quite some time, right? When somebody speaks in an accent, we have to say in their accent, like, I'm trying to think of an example. Do you know what I mean? But like, just because they say it a certain way, because where they're from, they say rah, they roll the R's, so they do it. Or if they say like Matauj Gamrot, he fought at the weekend. Matauj Gamrot. It's like, well, I'm English. I'll say Mateus Gamrot. He says Matauj. You know what I mean? But that's probably because of where he's from. Mm. If you look at it, the way it's spelled, Mateus. But still, so yeah, I'm just saying it. Luis Ajay Gomez from Puerto Rico.
I understand why the UFC says that, though. It's only because, like, you want to create brand recognition. And if everyone's saying their names, because honestly, I thought it was Makhachev. I got to be honest with you. I've been saying Makhachev up until the fight this weekend. And then, who was it? Who was on with you? Was it John Anik?
John Anik and Paul Felder.
Yeah, and then they were like, Makhachev. And I was like, what?
No. So it's the same with Khabib. Right, you don't say the K. It's supposed to be Habib or Khabib, right? Habib. And John Anik's obviously so professional. He truly is one of the best in the business. He's very inspirational to work around and see just like the energy that he has and the passion for the sport.
He's a good dude too, you can tell.
He's the best. He's a great guy. He's infectious. He's very, very smart, very funny. He's great, but he takes his job very seriously. you know, which is good. He should. And like, he was talking about how we have to get his name at the top of the show. It has to be Makhachev, Makhachev, Makhachev. So I'm thinking to my man, it's Makhachev, Makhachev, Makhachev. And I couldn't do it. And people on Twitter were like, look at Bisping, take a shot every time he struggles to say Makhachev.
Because, well, I noticed you started calling him Islam.
Yeah, I was like, fuck that, abandoned ship. He's got a first name, baby boy, and it's a lot easier to say. Islam. We're going to go with Islam as opposed to Makhachev.
Makhachev.
Makhachev. Makhachev.
Makhachev.
Brother, listen. And I did this on the broadcast on Saturday night. Brother, listen. And Callum was like, Dad, you can't fucking do a Dagestani accent when you're commentating. I'm like, why not? It's a little bit of comedy relief. Anyway, we're going to get into all that shit, but I just wanted to, anything you want to talk about, Lewis, before I tell a little story? Not a story.
No. Please bring up a little story. There was the one thing that you actually sent it through as well. I thought it was a fun story to talk about, but we can get into it maybe later on.
Oh.
When we start talking about the fights, because I think it kind of relates. It's more sports related anyway.
Yeah,
so
yeah
let's talk about that later.
No, we'll get into it. But this is a story from last week, but I was just talking about it on Sunday night at home, sat around the fire pit. We had a nice barbecue. I said, oh, remember that? And it just gives me anxiety to talk about. And I'll tell you when to roll the tape, Brian, not just yet. I sent it through. excuse me. So in Santa Ana, city near us, 20 minutes away, whatever, the buildings, I don't know why they would design them like this, but a lot of the buildings, the square structures, and they're very, very close to one another. They're not joined, but there's a tiny little gap, right? And at the top of the building, the gap is 12 inches. And at the bottom, it's only 8 inches for whatever reason. And some woman, I'm assuming she was homeless and perhaps she has some kind of drug problem or whatever. She's totally naked. She's on the roof. She's taking a little nappy poo-poo in the middle of the night. Why she was naked, I don't know, but it's been hot lately. So anyway, but in the sleep, she rolls off, I think. This is my theory anyway. And she falls down the crack. And she falls all the way down. And she's trapped between two concrete buildings. And the space is 8 inches wide, Lewis, right? She's in the middle of the front and the back. She's slap bang in the middle, 8 inches. She was there for hours and hours and hours. And then the next day, some of the workers that worked there, they could hear, you know, screaming, right? And they're like, what the fuck? They're looking around. They thought, you know, and eventually they looked down the crack. They're like, oh my God, there's a woman there. But how the fuck do you get a woman wedged? She can't drink. She can't eat. She can't do anything. All she could do was scream and just... Like, I'm claustrophobic.
How long was she there for?
She was there from, like, they got her out at 5:30 in the afternoon the next day. I think she was down there from the nighttime before.
That was
imagine
fuck.
Trapped
oh my God, dude.
Between concrete, right? But how the fuck do you think you get her out? You can't send a hook down and just hook her up. You're going to scratch her to pieces. You're gonna inflict a lot of pain. So the fire brigade came. And using some special camera, they figured out where she was, heat-seeking, whatever. And then they cut into the wall and took out the thing, the block, and then they pulled her out. She was completely covered in concrete dust and everything. But, oh, it just gives me so much fucking anxiety because I am claustrophobic. And, you know, like in old movies, you see them like spy movies or action movies crawling through the air vents and stuff. Mm. That always gives me anxiety. Makes me
that would fuck you up.
Oh, yeah. Brian, I want to hear yours in a minute. But, Brian, roll the tape. It's a little minute-long clip from the news.
Please.
That I prepared, Harrington.
And now at 11, stuck between two buildings just 8 inches apart, a naked woman screams for help as firefighters scramble to get her out.
This is, by the way, this is a category of porn. Stuck porn? It really is. I swear to God, it's called stuck porn, where a woman's naked, I shit you not, and she gets stuck under a bed, or she'll get stuck like in a crawl space, and somebody comes behind her and happens upon, I shit you not, it is. It's called stuck porn.
Are you saying that this is a Brazzers scene gone wrong?
Yeah.
They all legged it. The cameraman's like, well, she's fucked. She's stuck down there. We can't save her. Just get out of here. Brian, roll the rest of the tape, please, buddy.
Colleen Williams, the bizarre rescue unfolding this afternoon in Santa Ana. NBC4's Hetty Chang with the rescue. And the mystery of how that woman ended up there in the first place.
In between the noises and sounds of their Santa Ana auto body shop this afternoon, William Madower and his brother heard something strange.
My brother heard somebody crying or screaming from the back. We thought it just the neighbor's crying because he lost his dog.
It wasn't his
Jesus.
And it was no animal.
It's like it's a little extreme, love. Just tone it down a notch.
But
keep it going,
but you can pause it for a second. But it's, if that's the sound of somebody that lost their dog, they need to fucking get some help.
Bro, you've never had an Alfie. When Alfie fucking died, that was times 10 at what?
That was you?
And when Dito died, even though I'm not religious, I'm like, this one's for you, Dito, if you're up there, buddy. So yeah, if you lose your dog, you scream and you cry and you get upset, play tape.
Roof and from the side of the building. Rescuers cut through the thick concrete wall to save the woman. They stuck a camera into these holes to better guide them. Dish soap on standby to help with the rescue.
Still the big question tonight, Fire officials believe that she got in through the roof. Up there, they think the space is about 12 inches, but down here where she was found, it's 8 inches wide.
She was just right inside here, as you can see.
She looked like she knew exactly what 8 inches was. That was too far.
She's scrunched in there sideways.
Bits of respect.
About
2 hours
in, rescuers managed to pull the woman out. You see her arms are covered with dirt.
Oh, no.
The unidentified woman was conscious when she was pulled out. She did not have any obvious injuries.
Okay, here she comes.
And was
just
rushed to
very psychologically bruised.
In Santa Ana.
Dude.
Anyway, you get the
one
idea.
Time,
you imagine
one time
that, though?
A friend, as a joke, like, he dared me, like, get into the trunk of the car. And I was like, oh, I'll get in. Ha, ha, ha. And then he closed it. And then he started driving. I almost lost my mind, dude. Like shrieking and thrashing and pounding. Like it was, and I was in the car. It felt like an eternity. I was in the car for maybe 30 seconds. Brian, it was Robert Kelly, who's been on this podcast before.
And for those people that aren't on the production side of this podcast, Brian just put in the group message, that's not your friend. Listen, in terms of an ordeal, an experience where you're going to get out, you're not going to die, but it's definitely going to traumatize you for quite some time. That, what happened right there, has got to be pretty up high on the list. I don't know. What does it for you, Lewis? What is, like, not an irrational fear, because that's pretty rational, but like, what is some fears? Because I'm claustrophobic. What about you?
I'm massively claustrophobic. That's why doing jiu-jitsu at first, as soon as I would hit the ground, I would be like, holy shit, I gotta tell. I felt like I was like, I couldn't breathe. I felt like there was a car on top of me. It was fucking crazy.
Yeah, so that's because you were in a triangle choke.
I'm massively claustrophobic, but I'm extremely afraid of heights. Extremely afraid of heights. Like, I really get nervous. I told you I brought James to one of those like skywalk things in the mall, and he went up, and I went up with him for 10 seconds, and I was like, fuck this. And I went down. I was harnessed. There was no logical reason for me to do that. Jumping from cliffs, it always takes me like an hour to jump off the cliff. I'm really, really scared of heights.
Yeah. But that's a rational one, to be honest. You know what I mean? You should be scared of heights. It's weird because when you're young, and we spoke about this recently, you don't realize the danger. But as you get old, you're like, no, so much can go wrong here. In fact, I saw this morning, and by all accounts, this is a fake video. But if you're scared of heights, it's still pretty trippy. Brian, show this one. It's a theme park ride in South Korea. Again, I don't know if it's fake. Someone suggested it was fake. It might be fake. It might be real. But still, either way, there's no fucking chance I'm getting on this. I wouldn't do the rides at the top of the stratosphere in Las Vegas. Press play, Bri. For the audio listeners, it's like one of those things that shoots up really fast, up the big pole, and then drops, another type of thing. But now they drop out on swings.
Whoa.
Want to watch?
No, that's fake. That can't be real.
And then it swings them around. And they're going to be like several hundred feet high up in the sky.
No. That's fake. That's definitely
fake. Why is that fake?
There's no way, because nobody would ever do that in their right mind.
Psychos do shit like that.
Is that real? Can you look that up, Brian, and find out if this is a real ride or a fake video?
Anyway, it goes on, but then it drops like crazy. Then it goes back up. It's like, no chance. I came off the Ultimate Fighter 3, and at the top of the stratosphere in Vegas, they have one of those things that shoots up, you know, and they have a couple of other rides. And I'm not good with that shit, but I'm like, okay, I'm with the boys. I'll do it. All the tough three cast. And Ross Poynton from England, who was on with me, we're on there, and I'm on it, and I am. I'm fucking terrified, and not in a funny way.
Like hyperventilating.
I am having a severe bad dude, right? And he's like, whoa, whoa. He's loving it. He's having the time of his life. And he was just accentuating my fear. I'm like, Ross, shut the fuck up. I'm going to fucking kill you. Shut up. Let me off. Let me off now. So, yeah.
I have a video here of the actual gyro drop in South Korea.
Is that real?
The ride is real, but that video is exaggerated. But this
That's what I used to get every 2 weeks in England. The gyro was that's your benefits. You get a gyro drop every 2 weeks. Come on, let's party.
Okay, we'll go fast forward to the exciting part. Yeah, I know. Slow ascent to the top.
For the audio listeners, they're going up very, very slowly. I mean, it's great podcasting, but what we want.
Does it just drop, or does it spin you out and fling you around like swings? Because that is what's fucking... Cattle. This isn't that bad. That's whatever.
That's fine. That's Come on, nothing. Brian. Anyway.
The Wonder Woman ride in Six Flags Great Adventure is wildly scary. Do you do thrill rides, Bisping?
Yeah, no, I'll do that. I'll go to Universal Studios and do all those roller coasters and shit. That doesn't, bother me too much. It's a little nervous going tick, 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 as you're getting higher and higher and higher. It's like, oh, but that's part of the fun. You know what I mean?
Right, exactly. Well, that's it. Like, I enjoy that, but I enjoy the strapped in, but it still scares me. And if you go online, you can find stories of so many accidents where they're like testing new roller coasters and fucking, I remember one girl got her feet chopped off on one roller coaster. It's crazy. So that when you read that stuff and you go on these rides, you're like, what is going on? You know what you got to see? And anybody listening to the podcast, you got to go watch it. And maybe, I don't know if it's going to mean as much to you because you're not from this area, but it's a great.
See, xenophobic.
What?
It won't mean as much to you because you're not from this area.
I'm talking about literally New Jersey.
I wouldn't want to be from New Jersey. So fuck y'all.
There's a documentary called Class Action Park.
Okay.
And it's on HBO Go. And it is excellent. My friend Chris Gethard's in it. It's so good. And it's about Action Park, which was a shitty water park in the 80s in New Jersey. And it was like everything was so dangerous. People were getting hurt regularly. And there was all of these lawsuits. And it was just a whole documentary made about how dangerous the rides were. They had all like the teenagers that worked there. It was absolutely crazy. But
I'll check it out.
Part of the thrill. Yeah.
I'll check it out. But still, yeah, there you go. Insects as well. There's another one that I don't like. Kind of irrational fear. Because they're fine. I am fascinated by insects. I like to watch them. I like to get close and just observe them and see. Because they're weird. You know, if you watch, these documentaries, nature wildlife programs and stuff. And, David Attenborough. There's some great programs on that David Attenborough's been a part of. But still, all of them. They're fascinating. I love to watch them. They're literally like aliens from outer space. The shit that they do, it's just fucking insane. But if one of them touches me, no. That doesn't fly. I do scream like a little girl. Yeah. I'm not very good like that. I used to have nightmares that an earwig was going to crawl into my ear. And because I saw like some stupid show as a kid where the earwig goes in and touches fibers on your brain or in your ear canal and the person goes crazy. I'm sure that doesn't happen. But yeah, always been scared of that.
Yeah, that's not really rational either. I'm terrified of bugs. I can't even kill a cockroach. If I see a cockroach, I'm like, oh, no.
I save their lives. No. I try. And then they go breed and make more fucking cockroaches, so I should kill them. But I do. I save. Hey, on our balcony right now, we've got a nest of birds, right? And when I first heard about it, Rebecca said, there's a nest in the gutter on the balcony. I'm like, well, we're going to kill the fucking nest. I said, we can't have that. We can't have, like, fucking nesting. And she said, no, what are you talking about? There's eggs in there. Anyway, there was three eggs, and the eggs have laid, and there's little deep, 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 deep. So we've been, like, spying up there now and again. But you got to be careful, because if the mother and father see it, they'll fuck off and leave the nest. But Rebecca can't help but go up and
film. Is that really true, though?
Well, I think so. I don't know.
I heard that as well. But I think
the chat with a bird. Okay. I'm like, yeah. So what are we saying here? If I take a look, you're going to fuck off. You're just going to shirk your responsibilities and leave those chicks to die.
I think they just say that to kids so kids don't fuck around with them and you feel bad. I think if you went over near the nest, the fucking mama bird wouldn't give a fuck and they'd still come back.
Well, blame Rebecca then, if that was a stupid comment, because that's what she says. But she's still going out there and doing it. She's flaunting it. That
was like, they used to tell us when we were kids that there was a special chemical in the pool. So if you pee, it would dye the pool different color.
Yeah. Who doesn't have a pee in a pool now and again? Certainly the ocean.
Who doesn't have a poop in the pool?
Oh, okay,
let's get crazy.
Every now and again.
All right, Mike, let's just take a quick second and thank Paleo Valley for supporting today's show. We've been talking about it forever. I love beef jerky. You love beef jerky. If you're on a low-carb, high-protein diet, if you want a quick snack on the go, you probably are already addicted to beef jerky or some sort of beef sticks, some sort of tasty, salty treat that is nice and easy and quick and filling and mostly healthy. We think it's healthy, right, Mike? But they're not always healthy.
listen, if you're addicted, I mean, that's a strong word. If you're addicted to not Paleo Valley, because you could get addicted. It's that good. It's that tasty. It's that good for you. And without a cold, it's that cheap. But if you're addicted to gas station beef jerky, you're a beef dick. You're not a beef steak. You're a beef dick. And listen, let me tell you, why is grass-fed beef so important? Well, it contains more calcium, magnesium, potassium, zinc, phosphorus. We could go on all day. It has higher levels of B vitamins, specifically thiamine, B1, and riboflavin. Listen, that's boring. But what we do know is gas station jerky has all the bullshit. It has hormones, MSG, mechanically separated chicken. It's just not good for you. Guess what?
It doesn't taste natural. It tastes like it's made. It's plastic.
It's chewy. It's hard. It's gross. Stinks your car out. This doesn't stink, by the way. It tastes delicious. The dogs love it. The kids love it. I love it. Everywhere I go, little Paleo Valley beef stick. Again, beef stick, not beef dick. I do not carry around beef dicks. I carry around beef sticks. They're great on the go. They're good for the kids. Lucas absolutely bloody loves these things. They are fantastic. 100% grass-fed beef sticks are the only beef sticks in the USA made from 100% grass-finished beef and all organic spices. Plus, we use the world old method of fermenting the sticks so they are shelf stable without the chemicals or the questionable ingredients. Listen, Lewis, how did they take advantage of this offer that we have?
Well, I'll tell you right now, you should be paying more money for these unbelievable, delicious, amazing treats, okay? You should be saying, you know what, I'm willing to pay more money, but we are going to go out of our way to give you a discount. All you got to do is go to paleovalley.com, PaleoValley.com, have them shipped directly to your door. You don't have to go out of your house. You don't got to go to the supermarket. You don't got to go down to Best Buy or wherever else you're buying your beef sticks. I don't know who's buying beef sticks at Best Buy, but that's a lot of bees. Beef sticks at Best Buy is not what you want to buy. Go to paleovalley.com. Enter the promo code BELIEVE15. You save 15% off your entire order. We're basically giving these to you. 15% off. Promo code BELIEVE15. Get them from paleovalley.com. Stock up. Who knows when the world's going to end. Get enough for the family. Enjoy your day. All right. Where were we?
Anyway. All right. Islam Makhachev. Say it, Lewis.
Islam Makhachev.
Oh my God. God, you should be a commentator. Islam Makhachev went out there. I'm just going to say Makhachev. I don't care. Sorry, brother. I do apologize, but you know, Manscaped, number one lawnmower. remember that? That was funny. Yeah, listen. Yeah, man, he was phenomenal. He was absolutely phenomenal. I mean, there's so many things to talk about. Obviously, there's the comparisons to Khabib. He's from Dagestan. And did you see that feature that they ran on Saturday night? If you only saw the main and co-main, you might not have saw it.
I didn't see it, no.
Dude, it's mind-blowing. The village that they're from in Dagestan, I mean, it's no wonder they're so good at fighting because it doesn't look like there's much to do. But it's these buildings made out of what look to be just cobblestones, like legit stones, rocks, you know what I mean? And they build them into the side of the mountain. And there's like some little, not streets, but like underground tunnels. It's like going back to Lord of the Rings stuff. They're like hobbits that can wrestle really, really good. And I'm not trying to be disparaging. I'm really not. I was just saying, when you see that and you see just how different life is for them, it's really inspirational to see where they are now and see what Khabib has done. And I was taking over the world of combat sports and one of the biggest stars and all the money he's earned and just how much he gives back to everybody in that village. It's incredible.
When you come from those sort of humble beginnings, I think it's it's funny you say, it's like, you know, what else is he there to do, right? No wonder they're so good at wrestling and in MMA, you know? Like, here, we have all the distractions in the world. I have video games and cable, and I have fucking all these great restaurants. I'm in New York City. It's like, there's so many reasons to be lazy and to not go and, like, just spend your time doing that. So I completely get that. But when you have that humble beginnings, you have to assume that Khabib he's been wired differently. I'm assuming he doesn't really give a fuck about flashy cars and jewelry and things the same way that people from other cultures do. Or maybe he does. I don't know. I don't really follow Khabib on social media, but he doesn't seem to be flashy that way.
No, he doesn't. And he doesn't seem to be wrapped up in the celebrity lifestyle either. In fact, Harrington, maybe you can bring the point up. I know it was in the notes, but this was an amazing point, actually. We'll get to the fight in a second, but seeing as we're talking about Khabib, we'll just stick with this. excuse me. He's such a great teammate and a coach. Obviously, his father passed away, Abdulmanap, and now if I'm getting this right, they're calling it Father's Plan. Javier Mendez was in the corner of Islam on Saturday night. He said, listen, the striking's good. You're doing good with the striking. But just stick with Father's Plan, which is obviously taking down and smash them to fucking smithereens. You know what I mean? Because on the feet, if you get caught with a shot, you never know. But Islam, after the fight at the post-fight press conference, he said, you don't understand what Khabib does for us. Like, he flies out here. He's retired, but he flies out here for the training camps, trains them all at AKA, puts them up in cars, buys rents a beautiful house for all the team to stay in, doesn't charge them a penny for rent, doesn't charge them for the rental cars or the gas or the food or the supplements. Anything they need, he pays for it all himself, and he's just trying to support all his local people and his teammates and his brothers. And I got to say, it's fucking beautiful, man.
That's awesome. And it also, you know, creates an opportunity for them. You know, we talked about this for years. Like, when you get to be at a level where you have a certain amount of success in this sport, you have a lot more advantages. Even, you know, you talk about going to train at the UFC Institute, right? Or just these other things that you didn't even have growing up, right? You sort of see it. And I think young fighters, it's a tough road. You have to really love it in the beginning. There's not a lot of money. You're doing it for the love of the game. You know, you have this bigger vision. Hopefully you become a champion one day. But you're putting a lot, you're investing a lot of your life into it, into sort of an unknown, right? And I think that when you have somebody like Khabib doing that for his guys and his team, it takes away a lot of that worry. Money doesn't solve everything, right? But I think it does help out when you're struggling and you don't know where your future is, to go, you know what, dude, I have this taken care of. I have great training. I have great partners. I have great food, cars. I'm sure that adds a lot to his team.
Yeah. Oh, no, absolutely. As you say, money doesn't buy happiness, but it certainly reduces the stresses and opens doors and makes things a hell of a lot easier. In fact, I remember, because I was always visualizing fighting Anderson Silva for the belt at 185. I did fight him, but not for the belt, not when he was champ. And I always remember thinking, this motherfucker Anderson's been headlining pay-per-views. He's the biggest star in the sport. He's got untold amounts of millions, you know what I mean? And his training camp facilities and the recovery people and the masseuses and the supplements and just the support network that he would have around him is far going to outweigh mine. And I was like, I thought, do I ask for like an extra little bump for the fight? Because I want to level the playing field a little bit. And Dana would have said, no, fuck off. No, absolutely. When you win the belt, then you get that. He's earned that. And that's just the way it goes, unfortunately. Yeah. Quick side note, just to revisit this, Brian adds, birds can abandon nests if disturbed or harassed. Dooming eggs and hatchlings. Less obvious, repeated human visits close to a nest or nesting area can leave a path or a scent trail for predators to follow. So Rebecca was right, you were wrong, and I actually didn't have an opinion either way. Anyway, Islam Makhachev. So, listen, everyone knows about his wrestling, the comparisons to Khabib, the style, the same coaches, same background, all the rest of it. But I thought Thiago Moises would give him a good run. I thought Thiago Moises was possibly a bad stylistic matchup. His striking looked really good last couple of times out against Alexander Hernandez, who's very good, but just hasn't been too successful lately. Moises looked great, and he talked about using footlocks, and I thought that was a really smart approach. But he couldn't get shit going on Saturday night. Makhachev was great on the feet. In fact, he landed more shots. He was the better striker. And the takedowns, he took them with authority. And then when he got on top, I mean, he was so good.
Yeah, and that's something that I guess he said before the fight. He was like, look, I just know I'm on another level from this guy. And it was very obvious. He sort of just walked him down. And it was a very, very impressive performance. I was impressed with the striking. I thought he was going to just, you know, take him down. And he just seemed to be really in love with throwing kicks, throwing high kicks, like really, you know, just sort of standing in the pocket, trading, throwing hard shots. It was great. He seems very well-rounded. And it was dominant. You know, it was really, really dominant. You said something during the fight about Moises, his back foot was sort of against the cage the whole time, you know, and he just backed up and stayed stationary. And I just think he was really at a loss for what to do. He seemed to be a little bit in a trance because of how good Islam was.
Yeah, well, Islam certainly, obviously, the better fighter. But I do think that, you know, to your point, that kind of affected him a little bit. It was kind of like a deer in the headlights. He's like, oh, shit. You know, he's like, oh, God, what do I do here? He's beating me on all aspects. But the point I was making was he was allowing himself to get backed up to the fence every time. And you're fighting a guy that you know wants to take you down. being against the fence is the last place you want to be. Number one, if someone's trying to shoot or take you down, you want to be moving. If you're a moving target, you're harder to hit or harder to shoot on. You know, if you move to the side, they're going to shoot on fresh air. But if you're up against the fence, that makes somebody that's a very, very mediocre wrestler, makes him a good wrestler. Most of the time when I took people down, it was against the fence because you don't even need to know how to be a wrestler. Remember what we were drilling when you came down to Costa Mesa? I was showing you, just go in, you just lower your base, you get your hands around the backside, you pick them up in the air, you put them fucking down. It's easy. Also, with the fence behind you, you can't sprawl, you can't back off, you can't do anything. Whereas on the flip side, the person that you're fighting, if you do anything to trouble them, they've got the entirety of the octagon behind them. So they're clearly in the advantageous position. So was it a rear naked choke? Remind me, I called the fucking fire.
It was, and if I'm not mistaken, Moises was a high level jiu-jitsu guy, right?
Phenomenal jiu-jitsu, very, very high level. Majev went out there, defeated Majev, beat him very soundly. And I don't know. Is there any negatives you'd say? Because some people, I saw people saying, oh, it was kind of boring, you know, but if you if you appreciate the finer nuances, the grappling that was on display, that was very, very high level mixed martial arts. I really enjoyed it. I think he's going to have a bright future. He called out Rafael Dos Anjos afterwards. He actually said he was going to call out Tony Ferguson as well, which I thought might've been a better call out, but, who do you want to see him fight next? And Harrington, jump on, give your opinion.
Yeah, please. You know, and I'll say, just to answer your other question about whether or not it was a boring fight, I thought that he was very dynamic. I thought he was showing a lot of diversity in everything he was doing, keeping his opponent guessing. And it was really interesting to watch him systematically break the spirit of Moises. Like, you watched it happen. There was a moment where, like, in the third round where he was just like, dude, he wasn't, like, he knew. It was like, this is happening. And, yeah, he probably could have come on a little bit stronger, a little bit earlier, but you can't fault a guy for fighting a perfect fight, wanting to, you know, stretch his legs, get more rounds in, get more cage time in, work on his striking. I mean, if I'm Islam Makhachev, I'm going, that was a damn near perfect fight. And he got the finish after going into the later rounds. That's what you want.
Yeah. Oh, no, of course. That's absolutely what you want. You want the finish. You know, had it been five rounds, maybe there would have been a bit more negative backlash. But is Harrington around? Yeah, Harrington, if you're there, come on. But he said there was four.
He's in Harrington.
He's in Harrington. Nice one. Good one, Lewis. Harrington, raise the microphone. Turn on the microphone and maybe be prepared to speak when I stop. But you were saying there was four performance bonuses added on Saturday night. Wasn't aware of that. Thank you. As soon as the fight's finished, I jump in the car and get the hell out of there. But who were the recipients?
Okay, so you had Rodolfo Vieira, black belt hunter, Misha Tate. You had Billy Quarantillo, got fight of the night. That gentleman, Gamrot, you know, whose name you said earlier that I can't say, for his submission over Tausch, defeated Jeremy Stevens with that Kimura. And then the first fight on the prelims of the night, the winner there got a bonus for a quick knockout.
Oh, well, that's nice. I wondered if Islam, that's why I asked you there. But still, first fight of the night, obviously lower on the pecking order. Always lovely to see one of those guys get the bonus. You know what I mean? It doesn't. If you're the first fight of the night, it doesn't always mean that you're like the lowest ranked or, you know, but generally that's the spot. Who do you have the name right there? I don't have it off the top of my head, but generally, you know, when it's your first fight, maybe it's your debut. Maybe it's, was it Alan Bordeaux and he took on Rodrigo Nascimento? Yeah, that wasn't good, and that wasn't racist.
You nailed it.
Not at all. I was just excited because I remembered Nascimento.
If you pronounce the Korean zombie, if you're like, oh, the Korean zombie, like that would actually be racist. So that's what they kind of want you to do with all these other cultures.
All right, but let me. No. Well, you're right. But Rebecca.
Oh, Chen Sung Yong. No, you can't do that.
Rebecca had a good point about this because just recently we were watching something on the news and they were talking about something in Germany. And the news reporter, you know, I don't know if this is German, but she was doing this and it was no problem. You know why? Because it was a white person to a white person. Mm. You know what I mean? But if it was white to black, whatever. We're just having fun. We're just trying to enjoy ourselves. Don't be so fucking sensitive. Harrington, anything else to add before I tell you to get off the screen? You can add something.
Yeah, there was one other big name that Islam Makhachev brought up. It's while he was being interviewed by the post-fight team. Michael Chandler made his debut on the analyst desk this weekend. And Makhachev said, hey, you know, I know you're here in an analyst role, but, you know, you're coming from Bellator. Everybody says you're the guy to beat. Let's do this thing. you know, and Chandler immediately decided to put that analyst hat back on and just talked about what a great performance he had. But he did say that he believes American wrestling could beat Sambo. So, you know, that fight could be, you know, somewhere down the line.
No, that's really interesting. I'm glad you mentioned that. I didn't see that. But yeah, Michael Chandler, nice guy. Met him for the first time at the weekend. Obviously, he was working the desk. Here's how you know that somebody's in fight shape or they just fought recently. You know why? Why do you think I'm going to say this? What do you think? What's your guess?
What's my guess? I don't know. I don't have a guess. I don't have a guess.
No, it's okay. I wouldn't have one either. I'd say, I don't know. Just fucking tell me. No. So I walk in on Friday or Saturday, pardon me, and he's in the makeup room. The makeup room's like a communal room, you know, people going in and out. The lady there, she's touching us all up so we don't glare on camera and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. That's mainly what the makeup's for. People got all makeup. It's like, no, we're on TV and there's lights and the lights bounce off your forehead, kind of like Lewis's right now. And it's distracting for the viewer, so that's why they do it. But anyway, he's sitting there. Normally we're all suited and booted and then we get our makeup on. Chandler, shoes on, pants on, topless, sitting there in front of the mirror, you know, fucking flexing. Like, and he did. He's in great shape. We're like, oh my God, here we go. Here's how you know someone's in shape. Gotta say, Michael Chandler, what a lovely guy. First time I ever met him. Nice guy. Very, very nice guy. Thought he did a great job at the weekend. Well done, buddy. Congrats.
Get him on the show. Let's go.
Let's do it. I didn't want to fucking the first time I meet him. Hey, Chandler, nice one. Hey, buddy, podcast, let's go. He'd be like, fuck you. I've listened to a few episodes. You picked against me.
It's an opportunity for him.
It is. It's a big one.
It's a huge opportunity. The believers, let me tell you something, believers are for life. Every time we have a person on this show, all the comments are, you know what? I didn't even really care about him before that, but now I fucking love him, dude. We turn believers into fans of these people. So Chandler should be looking forward to his appearance on the Believe Me podcast. And also, I'm really interested in that fight. It's a great fight. And I like the fact that Islam Makhachev is calling out big fucking names, unlike Sean O'Malley.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, don't. I don't want to hate on Sean. Sean's doing great things.
But I'm saying this is the way it should be, dude. Islam's got all this hype. He's the fucking man, dude. And he's coming out and he's calling out all the top dudes, all the guys that, like, that is a belief in yourself. Dude, Islam Makhachev versus Michael Chandler, you would almost say, like, all right, probably Islam should slow his roll and call somebody a little bit lower ranked. But no, dude, this is the perfect fight.
No, it is. It is. And you're right. It is a great observation by you, Lewis, but I'm not jumping on the bandwagon with that. Wish Sean the best. Can't wait to see his next fight. But you're right. You do raise a solid point, Your Honor. Okay, let's move on. Co-main event. Misha Tate returned, dominant fashion. Marion Renault, last fight of her career, wanted to go out on a win, wanted to go out beating a legend. She'd lost four in a row before that, so obviously a lot of motivation. And she wasn't turning up just to get her ass kicked and get a paycheck and say bon voyage. She trained very, very hard for that fight and she showed up. But Misha was just too much. Obviously, the takedown, that's always been kind of the game plan for Misha. She's a very grappling, heavy style fighter. Very, very good. That's how she won the belt against Holly Holm. And what was it? Was it the third round, second round? I think it was third round. Yeah. And yeah, you know, it was textbook. You know, she got it down, got a top, got a good position and finished it with ground and pound. I mean, Marion Renault, well done. Thank you for your services in the UFC. Enjoy your next endeavors in life. But Misha Tate, she's back in a big way. It was beautiful to see after a 5-year layoff. I thought she did look really, really good. And calling out Holly Holm already, but give me your thoughts, Lou.
Yeah, I thought it was great. I love Misha. Been a big fan of Cupcake Tate for a long time. And, you know, heavily rooting for her in the Ronda fight. How many times she fight Ronda? Twice? Trilogy? I don't even know.
Twice, yeah.
And, yeah, she's awesome. She's a cool chick. She got a great personality. She looked jacked. Dude, she's always been kind of jacked, right? She's always had, like, but when she comes into the fights, I don't know, her back was, like, ripped. She looked really, really strong. Wrestling was great, as always. Look, Misha's one of the first stars of female MMA, right? She was one of the first people waving that flag. And the fact that she can come back in, jump back in after 5 years off, awesome. She's got a massive name. She's going to be a fight or two away from being able to challenge for a title, right? So good for her. I loved it.
She called out Holly Holm and I think that's an interesting call. I'm not sure if I was her manager I would go for that call out. I would maybe advise against it. I respect you doing that. Holly Holm, you know, she's a former champion. She's had some great wins. You know, I think she's lost a couple recently. I don't have a record right in front of me, but if I recall rightly, she's lost a couple recently. Misha has the win. Normally, it's the other way around. Normally, it would be Holly calling her out. Holly called out Misha. Misha said she was down. All right, well, fair enough. Yeah, that's fair enough. Because, you know, Holly is championship material. Maybe she's getting a little bit older, but she's still a dangerous lady. Misha wants to fast track to the title. And she was talking about Yana Kunitskaya, had she have won, but she didn't. But it'd be crazy because I think there is a lack of contenders for Amanda Nunes. Of course, Nunes already beat Misha, you know. But Misha's just a big star for the division. She really is. She's one of the founders, if you will, in, you know, the highlights or the when women's MMA started to really be under the spotlight, she was one of the big players in that space. You know, yeah. So anyway.
But and that rivalry put women's MMA on the map, honestly.
Oh,
Misha
absolutely.
Versus Ronda. That was like the, you know, people were really, really excited about that rivalry. Look, I understand why she called her out. You know, Holly Holm's ranked number 3 in the world.
Yep.
Much more interesting fight than Jermaine Durandamay, who's ranked number 2. Who is Amanda Nunes fighting next at 135?
She's fighting Juliana Pena at the next pay-per-view. I believe it's in Houston, Texas. Yeah.
I mean, honestly, yeah. Durandamay might be, you know, that might have been the better call-out because she has the win over Juliana Pena. But yeah, look, Holly Holm's got 2 wins in a row. She's ranked number 3.
Oh, she does. For some reason, I thought she'd lost recently.
And she's a bigger star. She's a bigger star, right? So, and if you're Misha, you're like, dude, I fucking beat Holly Holm. I know I can beat her.
It's a tough fight. Listen, she was losing in that fight. And that's why I say I respect the call out. You know what I mean? Because, you know,
I don't remember it. Yeah, tell me.
Well, I watched it recently, obviously, because I was commentating the fight. I got to know the history of the fight. So I watched it back. And, you know, she had a really good round 2. Round 2, she got it down. But in round 1 and round 3 and 4, I think, she got... You know, she was going after fresh air. Holly just wasn't there. As we know, she moves a lot. She was landing a lot of strikes. Holly was fighting her fight. Misha only got to fight her fight in the second. And I believe in round 5, after having a tough fight, and I really respected it from her because she didn't give up. She didn't she didn't quit on herself. You know why?
Quitters
never win, baby boy. But yeah, she got it. She got the takedown. She got the choke. So God bless her. But still, she wants to be the champ. She wants to get in big fights. You know, I mean, that's a big fight. It's a big fight, but it's also a dangerous fight. That's why I say I respect it.
Harrington doing a little fact checking in the comment section. Holly called out Misha. Misha said she was down. So that actually does make more sense, Bisping, as you said. If it would make more sense.
Read Harrington's next one.
And then in 1, 3, and 4, she got her ass kicked. Yes, during that fight.
Not nice. Misha Tate takes the time, comes on the podcast.
Wow.
Okay. Harrington comes on, acts like a little sicko fan, gets a little bit creepy, and that's how you speak about it.
Did he get creepy with Misha?
Creepy.
No.
And that's how you talk about it. You take a name in vain like that. Oh, she got her ass kicked. Disrespect.
What did Harrington do that was creepy? It got weird. Brian says, did you mention her breast implants? He mentioned her breast implants, didn't he?
Oh my God. No, he started talking about Karen Bryant's age again. What else? Do you know what I mean? I'm just kidding. He didn't get creepy. He didn't.
I'm sorry. I mean, that's my favorite female fight of all time because she was getting her ass kicked for rounds 1, 3, and 4. And she decided to go out on her shield, went in for that takedown, despite, you know, getting just absolutely battered every time she got near Holly Holm. Yeah.
I love that idea for a fight now. If she was losing that fight and caught it and then Holly wants to get it back and Holly's ranked number 3, Misha comes right back in, jumps back into the mix, the top 3 female bantamweights in the world. Beautiful. Incredible. Good for Misha.
Very good for Misha. Congrats. And maybe we'll get you on the show again soon.
All right, let's take a moment and thank HempFusion for supporting today's show. Everyone always talks about how important it is to get a good night's rest, whether you're an athlete or you're just the average Joe, but following that advice can be difficult. We got a lot going on in the world, a lot to keep us up. Blue light is keeping us up in our eyes. Everyone's worried about quarantines and the D variant and this, that, the other. Well, let me tell you something. It's difficult to get sleep, and HempFusion sleep support, it is the best, absolute best way to get a good night's sleep.
And why is that? It's because it blends 10 milligrams of CBD with terpenes, omega, GABA, black pepper, clove oil, blah, 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 blah. Lots of great ingredients. Together, they unleash the entourage effect, working together to deliver a powerful night's sleep. I've told you about the stress support, which blends CBD and ashwagandha and some other things. That's awesome. They have energy support. And let me tell you why HempFusion why their quality is so high. It's because when they process the CBD, a lot of companies, when they do it, they overprocess it. And when you do that, you lose a lot of the other cannabinoids from the cannabinoids from the plant. Okay. And a lot of those other little ingredients, we're not talking about the THC, which gets you high, but a lot of those other ingredients actually work together with the CBD and it provides a much better effect. And the way they do it is much, much slower, obviously more, you know, it costs more money to do it that, but they don't churn it out like a factory. They do it with quality. They do it with care. And as I say, at the end result is a way better product. As I said, the sleep support is sensational. That's my go-to right now. They got CBD for everything. They got gummies. They got drops, tinctures, you name it. They've got it. They got skin creams. They got products galore, highest quality, totally organic. And all you got to do is go to hempfusion.com. Use the promo code COUNT. Going to get 25% off. Listen, 25%, that's a big order. The CBD is the highest level. It's truly organic, and it will definitely work wonders on your body. Hempfusion.com is the code. Sorry, is the website, and the code is COUNT for a whopping 25% off. Okay, where were we? Fight before that, Jeremy Stephens taking on Mateusz, whatever you want to say, Mateusz, we'll go with Gamrot. Gamrot is a two-weight division champion from KSW. KSW, if you don't know, Lucy, is a Polish promotion that has massive crowds, like 50,000 people there or something crazy. I don't know what it is. I've just seen the videos and it's massive. And he was a two-weight division champ, very good wrestler, high-level jiu-jitsu, good striking as well. Jeremy Stephens, been around the UFC roster forever, and he really is one of the most exciting dudes on the roster. He'll bring it every time. Anytime Jeremy Stephens in a fight, win or lose, you're gonna see some action. You know, problem for Jeremy is that the losing is what's been happening recently. Now, we spoke to him and he said, I haven't had a drink of alcohol in 8 months. I feel so much better. And you know, he talked about being at Zen, being at peace with himself. He's got a good relationship with his mother now. Just everything in his private life is like going better. And of course, not drinking is certainly going to help that when you're an athlete and just feels better going to the gym. And I was, you know.
Devil's advocate. I mean, if he hasn't won a fight since he stopped drinking, maybe we should start drinking again.
He hasn't. No. He didn't lose all those fights in 8 months. He hasn't won one in about 3 years.
Oh, okay. Jesus.
Yeah. He's like, I'm going to change something. Maybe I'll stop getting shit-faced the night before. No, that's not what he said. But yeah, unfortunately, Mateusz Gamrot, you know, it was too much. Took him down pretty easy. The guy, Mateusz, does do these very, very low single legs or even ankle picks. He did that to Jeremy Saturday night. Jeremy knew it was coming. He said he was an ankle biter. But Mateusz got him down, got on top. And it was an old school Kimura. You don't really see them that much these days. I was thinking about this. When's the last time you saw like an old school Kimura like that from side control where you step over and you get the arm, you put it over and you really fucking twist it up the back? You don't really see it too often these days.
I would say this afternoon during jiu-jitsu training for me, but you know, besides that, no, not in high level MMA.
Oh god, I mean of course, because you are high level. I know, but we're not talking about world-class jiu-jitsu, Lewis. We're talking world-class MMA, brother.
Of course.
Yeah. No, he did good. I felt for Jeremy though. I did, because you know, he really wanted to win. He's a fighter. Jeremy is a fighter, as I'm sure Gamrot is. They all are. You know what I mean? But when you get to know someone a little bit and you realize, you know, how much this means to them and he needs the money, and it's just heartbreaking. This fucking sport's so sad. Do you know what I mean? It really is, because everyone, you know, when you're sitting there and you're calling fights, one guy, the thrill and the agony, that's what they call it. One guy goes home elated and the other one's crushed. And we know this, it's nothing new. But to see it so up close and personal, you do feel for them. And certainly when you start to bond little relationships with them, you're like, ah, man, fuck's sake. I mean, the good news is you're not hurt. Your arm, you know, it was okay, even though it was right up. I don't know if you saw the submission, but fuck me. But that's the way it goes, man. That's the way it goes. I hope he still has a job. I'd like to see him fight back again. But yeah, well done to Mateusz Gamrot.
Yeah, I mean, Jeremy's the type of guy that, you know, look, I don't know. He's 0-5 with one no contest in his past six fights. It's, you know, it's rough. But he is the type of guy where he's exciting. No matter what, he comes in, he's going to make an exciting fight with anyone. So he's the type of guy that makes these, like, if you look at the guys who he's lost to, Calvin Kattar, Yair Rodriguez, Zabit, Jose's old school, but like, this is a guy who's making these young guys look fucking great in exciting fights. So it's not like, you see it sometimes. You see guys that like they're not exciting fights, and then if like they can, they make exciting fighters look bad, right? Trying to think of other more recent in recent memory, but like a John Fitch. I remember when John Fitch he had like 12 in a row at 170, and I was like, but let me tell you something. As soon as he loses one, he's gone because he's killing all these contenders. He's killing them, and he's making them look bad with these sort of boring performances. And that's not a knock on John Fitch. It was incredible to watch. If you're a fan of MMA, you're like, God damn it, he was fighting damn near perfect fights. But he was with these real, like taking exciting fighters and putting them in boring fights. And that's not really what the sport's about. The sport's about it being really exciting. So when those guys lose, those guys are typically cut a lot quicker.
Yeah. And also you got to remember as well, another point to consider on that point with John Fitch is that that was in a stage where the sport was still booming. It was, sorry, pardon me, blossoming. It was nowhere near as big as it was now. I remember when he fought BJ Penn, UFC 127 in Sydney, I believe it was, or maybe it was 110. I'm not sure, but still, I was there for one of them. And, as I say, the UFC was still trying to grow to the beast that it is today, you know, and a lot of people didn't have the finer understanding of the grappling and the jujitsu and all the rest of it. You know, it's still 127, still, you know, it's still healthy into it. But I think over the last few years, it's really grown massively. Now people kind of appreciate the grappling. Like, look at Islam Makhachev, but he's getting finishes. Look at Khabib, but he was getting finishes. Not all the time, but most of the time. But still, they're huge stars now. But I think back then, you're right. I totally agree with your point. But it also was because the public didn't really buy into all of that and didn't really appreciate it. There is a learning process when you start watching mixed martial arts to appreciate what you're seeing.
When I first really got like obsessed with the sport, you know, UFC 40s, I would say, right around four, whatever, the Chuck Liddell, Randy era is when I like really got into it. Chuck Liddell, Randy, Tito, Andre Arlovsky. So whatever time that was, but the crowd would boo audibly when it would hit the ground, when it would just hit the ground. Forget even like waiting for an exchange or like it being sort of stalled out or like lay and pray. I'm talking about they would go for a takedown and then immediately the crowd like boo, and they had to educate the public. I remember old UFCs, there was a Mark Lehman would come on and give like tutorials on jiu-jitsu in between the fights so people understood what they were watching. And I honestly, it was really, for me, I loved it. I was like, this is the most interesting thing in the world. Me and Dave Smith were fucking slapping triangle chokes on each other in the living room watching the fights. But it was a very deliberate and very smart process that the UFC understood that they had to educate people. The commentary, the reason why Joe Rogan and Goldberg and these guys were so great was because they really understood how to lay it out for you, the viewer, and let you know what's going on so you understood how exciting it was to watch the ground game. So it was a long educational process, but you see it now. I mean, the fans really appreciate great grappling now.
Yeah, but that's what we do now as well. We have to explain to the, you know, the listeners at home. I think that's why they like former fighters explaining it to them or calling the fights, because, you know, they can resonate with the fighter. They've seen them fighting. And if you can eloquate it or put it across quite as perfectly as we can, then fucking hell, why wouldn't you?
I actually thought that watching you this weekend, you do a great job at articulating in real
time. Articulating, that's the word I was looking for, not eloquenting or eloquating. I'm like, no idea. But you do, you dick.
You do a really great job at explaining what's going on, like in a very specific and technical manner, but in a way that the audience does get it. I thought that consciously watching the main event while you were commentating.
Thank you, sir. Well, there's a saying, I don't know what it is specifically, but they say if you can't explain something in a basic way that other people can understand, then you don't understand it yourself. It's true. If you don't, you know, if you're like, then you don't even know, you're faking it. Anyway, I want to talk about this. I'm interested to talk about this because it is a good talking point. Rodolfo Vieira. Okay. He was, he's a very, very high level jiu-jitsu guy. Was he on the prelims or the main card? And who did he fight? Oh my God. He fought Dustin. That's it. Harrington, help me. I'm sinking. I need a life saver.
Stolzfus.
He fought Dustin Stolzfus. He came to the UFC, Rodolfo Vieira. He was a 7-time Abu Dhabi open weight champion. He's a 5-time world jiu-jitsu champion. When you see the man, he's built like a brick shit house. He's muscles on muscles, right? And when he came to the UFC, he was undefeated, and he would start a fight and he would pick motherfuckers up. He would slam them down and he would just fucking take a limb or a neck. And it was like, whoa, this guy is a beast. This guy's going to go a long way. He's got potential championship material, you know what I'm saying? But then he fought Fluffy Hernandez, okay? I forget his first name. Anthony Fluffy Hernandez. And he got beat. And Fluffy Hernandez is, you know, he's a tough, scrappy fighter, and he's had some good wins. He's had a few losses as well. And I thought, watching that, I thought, this is maybe a few months ago, by the way, 6 months maybe. I thought, well, this isn't a good matchup for Fluffy. Hernandez is going to get, you know, he's going to get smoked here. It's not good. And in the first round, he did. He got picked up, slammed multiple times. He had his back taken. He was in guillotines. He was in, you name the submission, the guy was going for them. Right. But as I say, he's jacked. He's jacked. Very jacked. I'm not saying he does steroids because we have USADA, but I don't know. He's very jacked. I'm not saying that. I'm joking, by the way, but he's very jacked.
Pull up a picture of him for a second. Can we take a look at him?
Pull up of one flexing. But guess what? He started to run out of speed. He started, if you don't get the finish and you're full of all that, you got all those big muscles, you know what I mean? It's hard because those muscles require oxygen and blood. And the more you use them and the bigger they are, it's more oxygen and more blood, and you're going to get more tired. And anyway, in that fight with Fluffy Hernandez, that's a terrible picture. That is not even him. That's not even him. Oh, my God. Good job, though, Brian. I appreciate you trying.
Up a picture of the most average body in MMA.
Yeah. I mean, listen, that's what came up when I Googled him.
Yeah, that's not him. That's not him. But still, that might be Dustin Stolzfus, not Rodolfo Vieira. But still, whatever. Who cares? The guy's jacked, trust me. But still, he ended up getting guillotined. He got finished by a choke, which for him, I would assume, is very embarrassing, you know, because he's a big name in the jiu-jitsu world. Anyway, little history lesson there. Saturday night, goes out there, and I was like, man, this guy needs to have better improved his cardio. And they were talking, there he is. That doesn't do it justice. He's a big dude, trust me.
He's ripped,
muscly. Yeah, he's ripped.
He's got 13 abs. It's fine.
Yeah, 13 pack. But because John Anik was saying no. You know, maybe no. He's been working with a sports psychologist and working on the mental aspects of the fight game. And I say, I didn't swear, but I was like, "Fuck that! He doesn't need a sports psychologist. He needs a treadmill, okay?" Because what happened in that last fight, he got exhausted. So I'm very interested to see if he's fixed that. And what we saw in the fight on Saturday night was he didn't go for any takedowns. He won the fight essentially with his jab. And I think in the end, it was a rear naked. He got him down and choked him out eventually. I forget the submission off the top of my head now. Maybe Harrington can say. But the point I'm saying is he was so scared. And I don't know this, and maybe I'm getting this wrong, but it seemed to me, that's a better description. It seemed to me that he was kind of worried and nervous about running out of steam and gas, that he wasn't fighting his fight. He was basically having a stand-up fight with the other guy, and the other guy wants it to be a stand-up fight. Mm. And it's just crazy. I was like, man, it's such a mixture of emotions when you go into a fight, because here he is. He's one of the very best in the fucking world, and he's not even trying to grab him or grapple him because he's scared that he's going to be tired. And when you're in there and you're tired, it's the loneliest place in the world.
Yeah, no. I can't speak for him, but I know that, dude, being exhausted is just the absolute worst feeling in the world, just in general. If you want to do anything, like if you're trying to fucking anything that you're, if you're trying to swim, if you're trying to run, whatever it is, you feel like you're drowning. So I can only imagine if someone's trying to take your head off. But I respect him. He goes out and he fights, you know, a little bit of a different fight. Maybe he was working on a striking. Maybe he was working on the other aspects. And if he won the fight, good for him.
Oh, no, he definitely won the fight, and he looked good. I was just saying, I just thought it was kind of fascinating and interesting that here's a guy that his skill set, his specialized skill set, is clearly one of the very best in the world, but he was choosing not to use it because, like, he still had those demons, those skeletons in his cupboard about the last fight and getting tired and getting finished, you know what I mean? And you're seeing a fighter here playing to the other hand, and he's starting, he was actually winning, but still, it could have been going the wrong way, you know? But what was I going to say? I was going to say something then. Oh, talking about being tired. This is pretty funny. Callum leaves on Wednesday to England and for the Commonwealth Games selection. So I took him for a run. Did Did I tell you about this?
No.
$3,000 fucking dollars for his flight.
Why?
Because they take the piss because of COVID, okay? $3,000 for an economy ticket. Generally, it'd be about $500. $3,000 for an economy because his coach, because we hadn't booked it yet because we're waiting to see if the quarantine, you got to do a mandatory 10-day quarantine. So we're trying to figure out if that would go away. It has gone away. But I was waiting and waiting and waiting. And his coach was like, he's going to book the ticket. Callum, every day, coach is going crazy. We're going to book the ticket. I said, all right, fuck it. We'll do it today. $3,000. $3,000 for $500. Wednesday. Anyway.
Well, that's, you know, so you bought an international flight during COVID, 3 days notice.
Yeah. No, but I've looked today. $1,400, $1,600 cheaper.
Well, yeah. Can't you buy him? Hold on. Buy him that flight, cancel the other one.
Cancel the ticket.
You can. For any reason.
Ooh, I might look into that. It's not a bad idea. It's going to go wrong, though. I'm going to buy two tickets. You're going to owe me $1,400. Do you know what I mean? Trying to scam the system. I took Callum for a run. I said, listen, you got to get your cardio up. You want to look like an athlete. You want to be in shape. So we went and did that run today, but I was forcing him to do some extra sprints and stuff. And anyway, we got back to the house. And Jesus Christ, I've never seen anything like it. God bless him. I did push him hard and it was like 100-degree heat at 12 o'clock in the afternoon. But he went white as a ghost. And when I say white, oh, no. I mean like that wall behind you. He was so white. And then he was wobbling. He was all over the place. And then Rebecca was freaking out. She was like almost screaming. She's like, sit down. I'm like, babe, he's fine. He's just tired.
He's a Bisping.
He's okay. Callum, stop being a little fucking bitch, okay?
And then I said, this is the Luke Rockhold attitude.
Exactly. Come on. I said, get in the pool. Get in the pool. You'll cool down. And he walks out and he goes, and then he falls in the pool face first. And Rebecca's like, save him. He's going to drown. I'm like, if he dies, he dies, okay? Because this is bullshit.
If he dies, he dies.
I'm like, I'm 42 years old with no knees and out of shape. I'm fine. Come on.
Did you say to him right before you went on the run, you were like, I must break you. You were just quoting Dolph Lundgren the whole time.
Now listen, we got to do some more work, buddy, before you get on that plane. I have not paid $3,000 for you to go out there and gas and look like Rodolfo Vieira not going for fucking takedowns, okay?
Hey, Mike, real quick, let's take a moment and thank RockAuto.com for supporting today's show. RockAuto.com is the number one place to go to buy everything auto parts. If you guys are, you know, if you work in your car at home, if you work in an auto body shop yourself, if you do it yourself, you have a friend who does it, you want to get the best prices for auto parts, and RockAuto.com has exactly that.
Yeah, listen, we spoke about this last week and everybody on the YouTube comments were like, oh my God, what a great sponsor. And so many people, I actually got DMs saying Rock Auto is basically the shit. If you're into cars and you know what you're doing and you're learning about cars and you want to get parts, accessories, whatever, rockauto.com is the place to go. Rockauto.com has been in business for 20 years and they make it easy to find the parts that you need at the best possible prices. Listen, we said it last time. People could be upselling you big time. I guarantee a lot of these smaller dealerships do that. A lot of the local backstreet garages, they're going to charge you whatever they want, but Rock Auto, eliminate that. No more talking to counter guys who need to order your parts. They aren't really sure what you're looking for. Never have quite what you need. And then after all that hassle, they will still charge you the storefront markups, as I said, at rockauto.com. You can easily find everything you need. And whether you're a mechanic, an auto shop, or working on your own car, everyone has access to the same incredible pricing at rockauto.com. So as I said, listen, if you're working on your car, you're learning about cars, whatever it is, you need something for your car, rockauto.com is the place to go if you want the cheapest price. Rockauto.com is the place to go if you don't want to get ripped off. But if you want to get ripped off, pay premium prices and just pay massively over the odds, ignore this ad. But if you want to save money, which I think you do, rockauto.com is the place to go. And guess what? No promo code needed as their pricing is already that good. Trust me, you won't be disappointed. rockauto.com. And listen, when you do order from there, which you will, and you'll save money and you'll be very happy, make sure you tell them how you heard about them. And that is on the Believe You Me podcast. rockauto.com is the website. The Believe You Me podcast sent you there. And the savings are what you're going to get. Okay, let's get back into it. Anyway.
Let's do plugs real quick. If you guys love the show, go to our iTunes, leave us a 5-star rating, positive review, subscribe on our YouTube channel, hit the notification button, get a notification every time the episodes drop, which is Mondays and Thursdays, typically at midnight Eastern, unless some other shit happens, which happens sometimes. And you get the entire on-demand library, all the episodes we've ever done, all ad-free and uncensored in one place, gasdigitalnetwork.com. Use the promo code BYM. Get a 7-day free trial. Get instant access to the entire on-demand library for all the shows on the network. We got some live stuff coming up. Obviously, you can come and check out An Evening with Michael Bisping, Tales from the Octagon, this October in the UK. I know Dublin is sold out. Very few tickets left for the rest of them. So don't wait till last minute. These shows are going to sell out.
We got some big surprises with that. Trust me, I've been working on some stuff. Oh, you're going to love it. You're going to love it. And if you're not there, you are going to miss that. Trust me. I'll tell you what, there's something very special planned. But anyway, continue. Very cool.
Please, please go grab tickets for that. And I'll be touring as well.
Buyticket.co.uk is the website. I don't know if you said that, but you got tours coming up, Lewis.
You know what? I'm going to tell you, we're going to do one better. We're going to put that link in the description on both iTunes and on YouTube. So you can just click on that link, motherfuckers. You don't got to remember
buyticket.co.uk. I don't need your fucking clicks. I don't need your links, okay? I don't need it, but buy a fucking ticket, okay?
Lewisofskanks.com is my website. I am touring right now. Brand new material. I'll be in San Diego this weekend. LA, Monday night, LA. There's a rumor Mr. Michael Bisping is going to be in the crowd for The Depraved at the Comedy Store on Monday night on the 26th of this month. Other stuff coming up, Uncle Vinny's Down the Shore and Stress Factory, Connecticut, going up to Saratoga Springs as well. Go to my website, grab tickets, and that's really that. Oh, grab the merch. BYM merch.
Yeah, dude, I'm wearing some of it right now. BYMmerch.com. Devil's Avocado shirts. We've got hoodies. We've got all kinds of stuff. We've got new designs coming as well. But if you're a real fan, if you consider yourself a believer, then show it. Show the world. Tell the people. Subscribe. All that shit. But buy a fucking t-shirt.
That's a great shirt, by the way. It should just say believer and then BYM podcast right on the back. Right on the top.
Yep. We're gonna do it. But you know what else is going to do it? Weird segue. Doesn't make sense at all. But someone's going to get punched in the balls. Okay, and I'm not talking about Harrington when I see him. I think I will do that. I'm not talking about you in the midsection. You acted like I punched you in the balls. Somebody from the cast of Jackass, they're doing Jackass 4, 5, 6, I don't know. I hope it's not my mate Steve-O. Steve-O's fucking awesome, did his podcast recently. Somebody, and Harrington put this in the notes, I know nothing about it. Please feel free to come on and explain. But this is ludicrous. This is crazy. They're going to let Francis Ngannou punch them in the balls as hard as they can in the nuts for Jackass 4. That's insane. There's just
It's as hard as he can? Because there's no, he's not going to really do it as hard as he can.
Well, who's this? Is this Ngannou? Says, that's the craziest thing that I've ever seen, man. I had to punch somebody in the nuts. Oh, he already did it. I did it the first time. They're like, no, listen, man. We know you people. We know that you're the hardest puncher in the world. It wasn't hard enough. So I was like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, I'm nervous. I don't know. I could have hurt this guy. He could have at least had kids or something. It's really small. I can't read, okay? Yeah, so
did he at least already have kids?
Yeah, I'm blind in one eye. It's just there. I'm trying to lean in. I'm trying to see. You're not helping me. You're making me sound foolish. All I was thinking, like, I wasn't thinking Islam Makhachev. I'm thinking, don't do a Francis Ngannou accent because now you're not allowed to do it, which is crazy. I don't like it. I don't like this world, but still, gotta be PC. Harrington, come on, explain. You told us about it. Tell the people about it. Or don't.
Yeah, so I don't have I don't have the name of the cast member who it was. All I have in that thing is, like I said, Ngannou hit him one time in the balls, right? And the production crew was like, no, you can do harder than that, and made him really do, like, you know, Ford Fiesta traveling at 86 miles an hour on a dirt road to this guy's nuts.
Oh my God, dude. Imagine getting a Chevy Cayenne right to the ball bag at 35 miles per hour in a school zone.
A Toyota Prius going at a healthy pace, right? Your Uber driver takes his eye off the road for a split second, and where does he hit you? Right in the balls. Listen, I don't know, man. How much money would they have to pay you for Francis Ngannou to punch you in the balls as hard as you can, as he can? There's no way. There's no amount of money. That would explode a testicle.
Well, that would be my problem is, like, wouldn't you be nervous that he would actually, like, do some real legitimate damage?
His balls would look like I shouldn't say this, but I'm going to, my little brother's balls when he was a kid.
No, what happened?
they got very swollen. He got big, massive balls. I don't know what they did, man. I'm sorry, Adam, if he's listening to this, but he won't care. He was about 8 or 9 years old and we shared a bedroom. So, like, you know, you see these things. And he was very young and didn't care that he was exposing himself. But he had something happen and his balls swelled up.
How big?
About that big, which is very peculiar on an 8-year-old boy. Do you know what I mean?
Did he freak out?
Yeah, we were all freaking out. It's not normal. Listen, us Bisfinks were blessed.
Making him show his balls to everybody in the neighborhood.
Hey, John over the street, get a load of this, come and say, hey, Adam, get your balls out. Show them. Started charging people. No, we're very well endowed. We are blessed. It's a gift and a curse. But that was abnormal. And I just feel like Steve-O or Johnny Knoxville or whoever is going to look like my little brother, Adam.
What was the end result here?
I don't know. But let's not focus on that. Let's focus on Ngannou. But he
can
we
tell me what happened to his balls?
I forget. It was like 30 odd years ago. Do you know what I mean?
Call him? I need to find out. You're giving me blue balls with this fucking story.
I don't know. I forget. It just dawned on me that I'd forgotten that even existed. But I'm like, wow, he did get gigantically swollen balls. I'll get him on. We'll get him on the next episode.
Please,
I want him to
tell that story. That's incredible. I wouldn't do that. And if you guys remember Jackass, the first movie, they had Johnny Knoxville, I believe it was Johnny Knoxville, fight kicked. Butterbean. No, it wasn't kicked. Didn't he fight Butterbean in a china shop?
I don't know. Yeah, that sounds like a racist term as well. You just don't know whether you're coming or going. But there was one where they get kicked in the balls.
And there was another one where there was like a female Thai fighter that they went into the ring with and had like a real fight. And she fucked him up so bad. It was brutal. But the Butterbean one was like crazy. Maybe you can pull that clip up if you can find it, Brian. But Butterbean knocking out Johnny Knoxville in a china shop, it was like, dude, that guy.
Did he knock him out unconscious?
Oh my God, dude. Because it was real. Like, he did not hold back. They were like, Butterbean, go. And he went. So this is like the next level of fucking Butterbean because, I mean, Butterbean's great. Obviously, he's a character and he's, you know, been famous in boxing for a long time. But he was almost like a freak show. He wasn't like a legitimate boxer ever, was he?
No, I don't think it didn't have the skills of a pretty boy Floyd. That's for sure. It was just a big fat bald head with some good old USA shorts on and a big massive punch. But still, you know, for Ngannou, that's a tricky one because, is this the video? I haven't seen this. Let's take a look. Got a little beat.
I can't believe you've seen it. That was so good, dude.
Oh, round one. Here we go. So there's Knoxville walking in. He's got the pink gloves on and there's Butterbean. I've seen this.
Dude.
Ah!
Look at the people just watching.
Oh!
Yeah, he's hitting him, dude.
Oh, yeah. No, for sure, hitting him. See, this is the thing. Back in the day, I thought all this stuff was fake. You know what I mean? I was like, but these guys are nuts. Because, as I said, I went on Steve-O's podcast and we talked about it briefly.
No.
Oh, God. He's back up.
Steve-O's up. Stay down.
Oh my God,
dude.
He could have died. He could have killed him. Look at her. Oh, dearie me. Anyway, before we get kicked off of YouTube, let's end that. But yeah, no, I used to think all that stuff with Jackass was fake, but no, they're fucking insane, man. Just for the sake of, like, these days it would be YouTube hits or whatever, but just to get famous on TV, I mean, God bless them. They are very famous, no doubt earned an incredible amount of money.
Initially, they did. It was pre, you know, obviously it was pre-YouTube, right? But when they initially did it, I believe it was CKY was the band. They would do these CKY videos. They'd put out these like home tapes that you would buy. And these were just kids from like fucking Philly that were doing these crazy stunts. And Johnny Knoxville ended up seeing it and wanting to get a part of it. But it was like Jeff Tremaine and Bam Margera who, coincidentally, they removed Bam or they wouldn't invite Bam Margera to the movie, so he's been freaking out and like he's got like a lot of problems now apparently, but what kind of problems? Like drug problems, alcohol problems. Like you could tell he's like really. But he made an interesting point. He was like, dude, he was like, I made a fool of myself for fucking years, and now these guys are gonna act like they feel bad for me and I need help. It's like, well, this is what it was. So it's like we were all doing drugs, we were all getting fucked up, we were all making assholes of ourselves. So now I've gone too far and I can't be a part of the making assholes of ourselves movie.
That's interesting. I just wonder. You know, like you're saying, he's got drug problems. I wonder if they ever have any long-lasting issues. You know, maybe when they get older, they get some kind of brain damage or whatever, you know, lawsuits. I mean, I'm sure they signed paperwork. That's a disclaimer. But if any of them guys did actually ever end up with any serious side effects or consequences when they get older, there could definitely be.
Johnny Knoxville is very fucked up right now.
Like, is he really?
Yeah. I mean, his body's torn to bits.
Yeah, I know the feeling. But still, interesting. Because, you know, people do make you sign disclaimers, but those disclaimers often aren't ironclad and a good lawyer can get around them. But anyway, yeah. Francis Ngannou will pop your balls. They will explode like a balloon. If he punches you with bare knuckles to the balls, to the testicles, you fucking, it's a bad day at the office. Simple.
Is there a number, though? Is there truly a number?
What do you mean a number?
Where he could punch you in the balls. A number.
Yeah, there is.
What's the number?
It's pretty high, but
cash on the table. Your balls are out of your pants. They're hanging out. They're like on put them through a table, like the way a speed bag hangs down. And he gets to come over and fucking boom, uppercut you.
That's not too bad though. But there's the uppercut and it hits the board. And
it
then
hits the board.
Your testicles are going to explode. They're going to explode. Simple as that.
What's the number to lose your balls?
They're not designed to withstand that kind of impact. Do you know what I mean? I don't know what's the hardest you've been hitting the balls. I don't know what mine is either. I don't keep that catalog of those type of things. I don't jot it down, believe it or not. But still, it's not that hard. It doesn't equate to a Francis Ngannou death punch. But whatever it was, it goddamn hurt. Incidentally, side note, I went through my entire fight career without ever wearing a cup in training. Weird. And never really got kicked in the balls too much. But still, yeah. What's your number?
Oh.
$1 million. Yes or no?
No. No way. No way.
Fuck that. Yeah, you would.
Oh, shit. $500 million.
$500 million.
Brian, let's get in the real world.
No, that's the real number.
No, it's not. No,
to amputate my balls.
No, bro. Listen.
No,
listen.
Bro.
No. I guarantee. Listen, I do not have that kind of money, but I reckon if I had $5 million. I reckon if I walked to your house and I stuck $5 million on the table.
In cash, in front of you.
I'm like, hey, Brian, I know you're living at your mother's, okay? I know you need cash. I know you're going about that fucking AMC stock, and I hope it goes to the fucking moon. But never mind all that. I've got $5 million cash, baby.
You never have to work with Harrington again. You never have to think about fucking, $5 million. You invest it all in AMC.
It would really... really depend on the bills that you picked, because like you could fit $500 million into a back or $5 million into a backpack, you know, if you pick the right bills. Yeah, hundreds for sure.
Pull up $5 million in cash in hundreds.
Brian knows far too much about this stuff. I do know this. When Dana White on The Ultimate Fighter, when they you know, you do the coaches challenge and they give you 10 grand cash. You know, but it's in ones, and it's a fucking block of money, and it does. Even though, I mean, don't get me wrong, $10,000 is a lot of money, you know, and it was even more back then. It's a lot of money, but when it's a block of cash like that, you feel like you've won the lottery, and you're standing there, and you're holding, you're like, yeah.
You ever see, like, I think maybe they're in Vegas or somewhere. Sometimes you'll see it's like a glass company, and their like advertisement is it's like $1 million or $100,000 in cash inside of this like cube, and they're like, if you could break it, you could have it. Yeah. And it's like people just, they have a video camera and there's people like throwing bricks at it and they can't break through it, and that's, it's a security company or something. But what's the most money you've ever seen or held in cash?
Oh, I don't know.
Not counting illegal activities when you were a nightclub DJ.
No. What is
that's
that?
That's 5 million in hundreds.
Yeah, all right. So maybe you'd need like a duffel bag, but
yeah, Brian, if that was in front of you, suck my dick.
Brian, come back on. Right, so we're here. I don't know what kind of environment we're in, okay? But it's a weird, shady underground thing. Think Eyes Wide Shut, okay?
This thing's a freak.
There's lots of people naked, but they got those Mardi Gras masks on or whatever. High net worth individuals, okay? And they get their kicks in weird ways, okay? Some people like to see other people have sex. Some people like to see people sexually tortured, okay? This guy walks in, he's mysterious. He's wearing a cloak. You know, some refer to him as the Count, okay? Right. He's a Count from a foreign country, from Europe, maybe Poland or somewhere. But my God, he's got a massive bag of cash. How much is in that bag of cash, you ask? $5 million. dollars in $100 bills. And before they make the, before they say to you, we need an answer, they say, listen, we want Francis Ngannou to punch you in the balls as hard as you can, and you walk away with that money. But guess what? We want this woman here to suck you off first, and we're going to take the sperm, and we're going to keep the sperm. So if you want to have babies down the line, you can still have a kid. So you get sucked off, you get babies, you get your sperm frozen.
Are you, what's going on with you today?
I'm thinking about selling my house. I'm going to sell my house and we're going to do this, baby. Okay? $5 million. You get sucked off by Rebecca. Okay?
Jesus.
You get sucked off. You
probably lower the, you can lower that price a little bit, baby boy.
Or up the price, whichever way it is. Dude, there's no way you turn that down.
Damn, dude. It's my balls. That's Francis Ngannou.
They did it.
Dude, he just threw in Rebecca with an indecent proposal talkie. This is crazy.
And I refuse it.
They're doing it for free on Jackass.
Yeah, I mean, I could probably $5 million. Fuck it. I would do pretty much whatever for $5 million.
Yeah, anything. Anyway, all right. What else did he say we're going to talk about? International Fight Week is back. That's awesome. I think in September something, there is two title fights on. Alexander Volkanovski. There is, I think it's Shevchenko. Someone, hold on. Let me find the part. Let me find it in the notes. International Fight Week is officially back. It will be the week of UFC 266 in Las Vegas, September. The card is 3 5-round fights with Valentina Shevchenko and Alexander Volkanovski defending their belts, plus Robbie Lawler and Nick Diaz, he's back, they're back, in a 5-round fight. So stacked fight card, International Fight Week's back. That's going to be exciting. I hope I get to be there. And
How often do we see that happen, though, where it's a non-title fight, that's a non-main event, that's a 5-round fight?
Well, Nate Diaz versus Leon, that's the first time they've done it in a non-main event for a 5-round fight. You know, which was history making. Some people asked some questions, but now they're doing it again with Diaz and Robbie Lawler. Rematch, 17 years in the making. Diaz knocked him out the first time.
Look, I love it. Okay. But a conspiracy theorist might say that.
What might one say, Lewis?
That the UFC really wants the Diaz brothers to have a shot in these fights.
Well, I mean, yeah, I guess stylistically you could make that argument. You know, if you look at them, they are literally triathletes. Do you know what I mean? They're known for the card. They have the opposite cardio of Rodolfo Vieira. Okay? Yeah. They have the opposite effect.
Yeah, the longer the fight goes on, obviously the more it favors Nick Diaz. How is Robbie Lawler's cardio? I can't draw to my memory how he does in later rounds and fights. I think he's done pretty well. Robbie's a beast.
Let me draw it from my memory. Got it. No, he never had a memory issue. He never had a cardio issue. Pardon me. I have memory issues. No, he never had a cardio issue, I don't believe. I don't think it was something that people raved about, but he had many 5-round fights. He was the champion, you know what I mean? So he was a good athlete. I don't think he was like had superstar cardio, but I don't think he had bad cardio. So a good, healthy, athletic ability. Diaz, on the flip side, as we know, they do thrive in that avenue. They got great cardio. Paul Felder's doing it all the time now. He's training for triathletes. It's crazy what they do. Just bring it up, Harrington O'Brien. I think we've done this, whatever, who cares? It's like half a marathon, 25 miles on a bike and like a 10-mile swim. I mean, that's fucking insane. That is cardio through the roof.
Yeah, that's a lot. And yeah, you would assume that this is just a little, I think it's a little bit of an advantage for Nick. A little bit of an advantage for Nick. Obviously, it was a little bit of an advantage for Nate, right? Because Nate, you know, in the later rounds looked better and Leon started to fade a little bit. So yeah, I would assume that this favors Nick slightly. But with Nick Diaz being off for as long as he's been off, I don't really know. The jury is still out. Who the fuck knows what we're going to see from Nick Diaz? Who knows how much Robbie Lawler has evolved, how much the sport's evolved, how much Nick Diaz, I don't want to say deteriorated, because that's a really negative word, but I mean, how is he sort of stuck in time? Because it wasn't like Nick Diaz was beating everybody in the UFC on his last run.
Well, he did well. He did very well against Anderson Silva. Yeah, he lost the fight. Unfortunately, Anderson tested positive. Nick tested positive for weed. And then he just went off and enjoyed himself. It seemed like he went on a 5-year bender. And it's great. I love to see it. He's in Vegas. He's in parties. He's in penthouses at 5 o'clock in the morning, surrounded by a bevy of beauties. He's smoking weed. He's drinking alcohol. He's doing God knows what else. Didn't see much training going on. But as I say, it looked like he was having a bloody good time. So five rounds, it's a 3.9 kilometer swim, it is 181 kilometer bike ride, and a 42 kilometer run. Didn't know I was French and working on the Metro Euro fucking points, fucking metric system, kilometers, but whatever. I like miles, but it's okay. Thanks, Brian. Sorry, should I say? But yeah, I don't know. It's weird. Five round five, but hey, God bless him. I'm just excited to see Nick Diaz back. He does bring a lot to the sport.
It's incredible. I'm so excited. What's the date of this fight? August what?
September something. I'm not sure.
Yeah, it's incredible. Yeah, I'm so, so excited. So excited. Huge Nick Diaz fan, so hopefully we'll come back and do some incredible things. And I'm a Robbie Lawler fan. Honestly, I'm rooting for Nick because I'm just such an old school Nick Diaz fan, but also massive Robbie Lawler fan. And this is such a great fight for them to make. I love these throwback style fights. Makes tons and tons of sense. And if Nick can come out and he can, you know, beat Robbie Lawler in impressive fashion, I think he makes a real case to come in and
It's an interesting fight, obviously, because Nick Diaz beat him soundly last time. But in terms of, like, as you said, the throwback fights and Nick Diaz being like a guy with that kind of reputation that everyone just is attracted to, Robbie Lawler's the same kind of guy. Robbie Lawler is an old school dude. As I said, this fight is 17 years in the making, the rematch. You know what I mean? It's absolutely insane. And he was around. He was a champion. He was like an old school guy. And the fact he's still here fighting in the fucking UFC after all this time is nuts, as is Nick Diaz. So it's great. As we know, Dustin Poirier won the fight, the third fight with Dustin Poirier. With Conor McGregor, pardon me. And as we know, Jake Paul has been talking a lot of shit about Conor McGregor. And he actually had a necklace made. We never talked about this. And like, if you are a fan of trolling, did you not see the Sleepy McGregor?
I didn't see it, but I think we did touch on it. I think that last time, I think during the press conference, he said he was going to send it to McGregor. Or he
so just
he
read we read out the note. So as you see here for the audio listeners, there's a very shiny plastic. I don't know if it's plastic, but it looks plastic. It's a doll. It's a figurine of McGregor. He's in the sleep position when Dustin knocked him out in the second fight. He's holding a bottle of NyQuil, and it's adorned in diamonds. He's got a chain on it. It's completely covered in diamonds. And he had that made for $100,000, according to Jake Paul. And he sent it to Dustin. Luce, you just want to read the
notes? Yeah, I can read it. It says, Sleepy McGregor, dear Dustin, congrats for your much-earned victory. I love what you are doing with your Good Fight Foundation. You deserve this chain more than me. Good always defeats evil. Keep winning. Love, Jake. P.S. Tell Jolie I said hi. She's a badass. Yeah, all right, you know.
I got to be honest, he's growing on me.
He's growing on me too.
He's growing on me.
I hate it, but he's growing on me in the sense that, like, I get what he's doing. It's deliberate. We're supposed to hate him, you know, and I feel like a mark. When I hate him, I'm like, oh, I'm a mark. I kind of like that. I'm like, oh, shit, I get what's going on here. I'm supposed to hate him. I fell for his fucking trap, but I'm still rooting for Tyron.
Yeah, God bless, of course. But listen, like, I mean, number one, how much money is he making off fucking YouTube? If you're going to go out there just to troll somebody and have a laugh at their expense, I could think of cheaper ways to do it than spending $100,000. Do you know what I mean? Like, I want to make fun of someone and there's Dustin holding it up. Looks smaller than what I thought. But you know what I mean? I like to have fun at people's expense. And if I had an enemy, even though they're not even enemies, he just like wants to get a fight with him and he wants to talk shit. And he goes out and has a custom piece of jewelry made for $100,000, I think Brian would let Francis Ngannou punch him in the balls for $100,000.
I don't think so.
No. You would. $100,000 on the table right there in 20s. In 20s, no. You would fucking do it.
No.
All right.
Fisping, devil's advocate?
Devil's avocado.
In retrospect,
go on.
Do you now have a little bit of an appreciation for Jorge Rivera's attempt at trolling you with YouTube videos? Because he was a little bit ahead of his time. I know that he disrespected you and you felt like he crossed the line. But when you look back at it, he was just essentially trying to do what Jake Paul is doing.
No, because he wasn't funny. It wasn't good. It wasn't executed well. That fucking little dwarf assassin, fucking Tim Kennedy, was involved. The whole the corner movie. No, I don't. And I'll still tell you. When I catch you on the street, El Conquista fucking door, I'll fucking knock your lights out.
You've not grown at all. You've not, in retrospect, you know what? Water under the bridge. He was trying to be funny.
Got assaulted in Bourbon Street and did fuck all. Okay. Yeah, I've grown. But when I get older, that little cunt. Hey, that's awesome from Jake doing that. And Dustin Poirier. Dustin Poirier is going to auction it off for the Good Fight Foundation. That's beautiful. I tell you what, I'd want to keep hold of that. I mean, in terms of fight memorabilia, you know, having a belt is awesome and all these little bits and the Hall of Fame statue behind me, and I got some other bits. It's great. One of the best ones I've got is when I fought Madison Square Garden. I think I showed you when you were here. I've got a ticket made out of solid silver from Tiffany's, the jewelers. It's the ticket for the fight at Madison Square Garden. They gave it to me when I fought there. And that's a real nice memento, a piece of memorabilia. When I get really broke, maybe I'll sell it for $100. But that's a solid piece of memorabilia, though. That's going to be worth way more than $100,000 down the line.
Maybe. I mean, it's also hideously ugly.
Would never wear it.
It's gross.
Would not be seen dead in it.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, look, good for Dustin. Good for the Good Fight Foundation. And good for Jake Paul for winning over the Believe in Me podcast. We see you, Jake Paul. We respect what you're doing.
We do. Last topic, I believe, then we'll get out of it. Nate Diaz calls for a bout against Dustin Poirier at middleweight.
What?
Poirier responded that he would touch up Nate Diaz at any weight. Excuse me. Pardon me, indeed. What is going on here? What in the world is going on?
I don't know what the
Dustin Poirier, I get it. Pay-per-view points. Millions of dollars. Go and get the belt.
No dieting. 185 pounds. Just enjoy your life.
Maybe not your optimal weight class. Ever thought about that? You know, there's a reason why you fight at a weight class. You know, 185, okay, fight Nate Diaz at 185. Nate Diaz is probably a naturally bigger guy. Hmm. But still, of course, I get it. Diaz has a cult following and he's a badass and he's a great fighter, but come on, man, keep the eyes on the prize. Don't get distracted by Nate Diaz. Of course, it's fun. That's a fun fight. That's one for the resume. It's one for the legacy. It's one that when he retires, say, yeah, I took on all comers. I took out Nate Diaz. But on top of that all, you want to say that you were the undisputed champion of the world.
And that'll change his life way more than a Nate Diaz fight will.
I'll tell you what. Winning the belt at the end of my career changed my life to a certain degree.
And well, that's where I'm drawing that from. Yeah. I know how much it meant to you and what the difference was. We were doing the radio show. I knew you before you were the champion, and I knew you after you got that title, and I saw the difference it made for you and how you talked about what a difference it made for you. So I agree with you. I think that really Dustin should be keeping his eye on the prize.
Yeah. Fun fight, don't get me wrong. You know, I wouldn't be angry at it, but I just like, if I could give him advice, which he doesn't want my advice, but if I could, I would say, I mean, I get it, but come on, go after Charles Oliveira. When you win the belt, you become the undisputed champion. It just makes it all worth it. Because I know I've got a couple of belts in there. I've got the Hall of Fame there. And I know that when I was a kid and everything I went through and all the struggles and the sacrifices and fucking whatever it is that I didn't do and all the hard work that I put in and having the no knees and having one eye and having no neck and needing wrist surgery in a couple of weeks, I had a big nasty injection in there today, so I got a band-aid on. But it makes it all worthwhile, because when it's done, you can sit there and you can even fucking see the belt and say, that's why I did it. I was the champion of the world. Out of multiple, was it 7 billion or 4 billion people on the planet, I was number one. I was number goddamn one, and that could never be taken away from you. And it's the highest height. You can't get any higher. So as a mixed martial arts, you are the the champion of the world. You are number one out of every other motherfucker on the planet. You are the official. This ain't some shitty kickboxing tournament with 20 people. This ain't Callum's fucking jiu-jitsu tournaments at the weekend. We got double gold, by the way. Shout out Callum. Gold in gi, gold in no gi. I think he had 3 matches. That doesn't make you world champion, but it makes him fucking good at jiu-jitsu. So shout out, son. That, the UFC champion of the world, you know what I mean? Okay, you can make arguments that perhaps someone in another organization might give you a good fight. Okay, all right, fair enough. But generally, the gold standard when it comes to mixed martial arts, and you can't argue with that, is the UFC. And being the world champion really means something that you can take to the grave with you.
Mm. And also, not for nothing, you know, Nate Diaz wins one fight at 155. They'll give that motherfucker a title shot. Let's get real. One fight, it could be a guy who's unranked and making his UFC debut. If Nate Diaz beats him, well, guess what? You versus Nate Diaz, headlining a pay-per-view for the lightweight title of the world, does twice the amount of pay-per-view buys that it does right now.
Yeah.
Easily.
Absolutely. And as you say, that, you know, if you run the UFC, you're in the business of having Nate Diaz in big fights. So as you say, win one big fight, fight for the belt. All right, that's the show. What's that? That's a pretty long one today, so that's good stuff. Hope you all enjoy it. Thank you very much for tuning in. We'll be back Thursday with a preview of TJ Dillashaw taking on Corey Sandhagen, wrapping up all the big news. No doubt some funny stuff to talk about as well. But until then, Lewis, anything to add?
No, thank you guys for enjoying the show. This was a fun one today. I thought we had a really, really good energy today.
Good. I enjoyed myself. Hope you enjoyed it also. Tell your friends, please share all that good stuff. But yeah, mainly take care, and we'll see you on Thursday.